This is Susan McGinnis. Leanne Hansen has just finished Weekend Edition. You can anticipate her back again next Sunday at 10 o'clock, along with me doing the red-eye shift. Senator Betty Fahrenkamp is going to be my guest today on Sunday at noon. I'll let you know if you're keeping track of the weather outside that it's 8 degrees in Fairbanks under cloudy skies with light snow falling, as far as I can tell. Senator, is the light snow still falling?
Yes, it is. It's beautiful out there.
Good. It was lovely when I came in early this morning. We have an opera coming up after this hour of conversation with Senator Betty Fahrenkamp. In the meantime, however, we're going to take a look at environmental issues in the Fairbanks North Star Borough and in the interior and around the state. We're going to take a look at budgets, of course. We have a legislative session coming up. We'll look at public use areas and Forest Practices Acts, big game guiding. Perhaps as well we'll take a look at some of the disgruntlements between state employees and the administration and some of the money problems around the state, whether we need taxes or we don't need taxes, whether we're doing fine as we are or not, and additionally, under environmental issues, whether the legislature last session did enough, in Senator Betty Fahrenkamp's estimation, to respond to the Prince William Sound oil spill, and whether we feel we're sufficiently protected for problems which may come up in the future. Let me introduce to you my guest, please. I'm honored to have once again Senator Betty Fahrenkamp with me. It's been quite a while. I think it's been upwards of a year or more since Senator Betty Fahrenkamp has sat with us on Sunday at noon. For those of you who don't know or would like to be reminded, the senator has been representing District K since 1978. She serves as chair of the Senate Resources Committee currently, also as vice chair of the Legislative Council, and she is a member of the Senate Transportation Committee. If you would like to join us on the phones, jot the number down. We'll be taking calls fairly soon now at 474-5044. That's 474-5044. Good afternoon and welcome.
Thank you, Susan. It's fun to be here again.
Good.
As you said, it's been a long time.
Been a long time. It's always my pleasure. I'm always glad to talk with you whenever we have a chance. Betty, let's take a look first at environmental issues around the state. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, the in and out of the newspapers were the problems of a couple who owned a service station downtown, had just bought it, were going to reopen it as a service station, all of a sudden discovered that their underground tanks were leaking and gas was leaching out into the ground. This problem, which was very personal for them, of course, is a problem that doesn't just affect one couple and one service station, and is exacerbated by not only leaks underground in underground tanks, but new federal regulations that are changing the picture of what we can and cannot do with those underground tanks. Can you give us a capsule of what's going on?
Okay,
here?
Let's go first back to that couple. As it worked out, it wasn't his tanks that were leaking, but tanks that had been there before. An old tank, but it
right.
didn't help him any because he's already out of business. You know how that goes. Well, we've worked on that all last session, and what's happening is that we have a new what's called the Lust Bill. That always gets everybody's attention, leaking underground storage tanks.
Mm-hmm.
And the federal government is making requirements that anyone with tanks over 1,100 gallons, buried tanks, must have $1 million of insurance, which, of course, is not available. And it's making it very difficult. Like a lot of the, some of the airlines have been in a process of purchasing ramp space and space at other airports, and they just backed off because in a lot of places we don't know where those tanks are. At the present time, it's only affecting those with underground tanks, not overground tanks. Of course, that'll come above ground tanks. But Fairbanks should be particularly interested in this because we have a lot of underground tanks just for our fuel. You know, we can't put them above ground and have them continue to flow. At the present time, homeowners are excused from and exempt from the $1 million insurance.
That's just what I was wondering.
Yeah. Now, we have homeowners that have over 1,100 gallon tanks. But the problem is, and you know how it goes, when you start regulating something, there's changes down the road. So that's what we have to be very careful about, and what people here have to be concerned about, because we have underground storage tanks for our fuel. Now, make no mistake, we're excused from the $1 million insurance, but we are not excused from the liability. And if you'll look around, I know in my tank, I can go out after it's been filled and you can see spillage. Mm-hmm. So it's something that all of us should be very concerned about. We should make sure that those who are delivering fuel have as little leakage as possible around those tanks, because sooner or later, we're going to be liable for that. Thank goodness it looks like about 10 years down the road. That doesn't, however, solve the problems that we have now. And if you notice, a lot of the oil companies and producers are now doing downstream. What I mean by that is that they're purchasing service stations. And if you'll notice in Fairbanks, especially down in Cushman, you can see where they're digging up tanks, refurbishing those tanks. What the legislation tries to do is make monies available for refurbishing, and somehow we've got to solve the insurance problem. If there is no insurance and you're required to have $1 million insurance, where does that leave you? Mm-hmm. No, it's the old catch-22. So we've been working on that now for some time. It's in the bill that we have at present is in Senate Finance, and I think John has appointed himself as Committee of One to work on that during the session. During the interim. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that we haven't been working on it during the interim, and there's a lot of concern here.
This refurbishing, that means retrofitting or replacing the
yes.
tanks?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And does this bill provide for state aid to?
Yes, it does. The problem is, where does the money come from?
Yeah.
And
to whom? Is every service station in Alaska going to be up possibly for this retrofitting?
That's the question. What is the limit? Who's eligible? And where does the money come from?
And wait, I made a mistake. This isn't just gas stations. This would be large underground oil tanks as
Anything.
Well, right?
Yeah. Any underground tank. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So is that just an open question? Where does the money come from?
Well, right now it's a debate between... the Senate has one approach, and the House has another approach, and John has another approach. So we don't know where it's going to fall down or where the money's going to come from. Mm-hmm. But, we do know that we've got to do something. We don't know yet what that's going to be.
All right, do the feds have an effective date when things have to be in line so that people can purchase this insurance?
Yeah, it's graduated. People are supposed to have that insurance now. But, and there's, as with most of the federally mandated programs, there's no money to do it with, and it's graduated up over a 10-year program. The question has been so far between the House and Senate, do we include above-ground storage tanks and get ahead of the game, or do we limit it to underground and stay where we are? The Senate's approach has been, hey, we've got enough problems with just the underground. Let's worry about the above ground later. We do have, our DEC requirements that you have to have the linings and the protection from the above ground tanks. My gosh, let's not get them into that catch-22 that the below ground tanks are in now.
We've mentioned just one couple in their service station that didn't fly because of the leaks. Do we have a picture of how bad the problem is in and around Fairbanks and the borough?
No, we really don't. Mm-hmm. We've been trying to gather information on that. So has the state agencies. We don't even know how many buried tanks they are, and in many instances, we don't know where they are.
So if somebody went out of business years ago, a new business came in, demolished the building, put up something else, there might be tanks sitting under there that we don't have a clue about.
You got it.
Is there only way to find out if they're there or if they're leaking is to dig up around them?
More than likely, or if you find, you've got some kind of residue going into a water system close, or into a creek or into the wells, then they'll start really looking around. But abandoned tanks, of course, most of the time now are not still leaking, because of those that we don't know where they are, usually it'd be leaked out by now or else
it's all gone.
Pretty well contained. Yeah. That's... that's just one of the issues that we're being forced to look at through what we call federally mandated programs, and we have so many court mandated programs as well as the federally mandated programs that it really keeps you kind of busy trying to figure out, you know, where next. I don't know where this is going to come from.
I want later in the program, or maybe if you want to launch into it now, to take a look at the number of regulations, requirements, rules that are coming out of the federal government with no money to back them up, and the call for the states to take over more and more of the responsibilities. Not all states may be quivering quite so badly as Alaska is over its budgets, but there are several that are having real concerns.
Particularly in the West. The Western states, you know, I've been very active in what we call the Western States Conference, Council of State Governments, because all of us know that there's strength in numbers. Mm-hmm. And in trying to get other states to understand the problems of Alaska, you know, they still ask me, why don't you drive home on the weekends? You know,
good idea.
But over the years, you try to get them to understand some of our problems, and they have. And the work has really paid off in getting states to gather on these issues. And leaking underground storage tanks is one of the issues that the Western Conference is addressing. Another one, of course, is waste. There's another federal requirement that says by 91 we're not supposed to have in-ground disposal of our waste. Well, you know.
Is this solid waste or all waste?
All waste. Where are we going to put it?
So we're talking about landfills.
Landfills. And I've been working with a group of four states have band together to try to form a compact. As you know, we ship our hazardous waste to Washington and Oregon. And as more materials are added to that list, then there's more cost to those who are trying to do business here. And it's going to get to the point where, you know, if we don't figure out something where you're going to go get your oil changed at the service station and drive home and find the oil, used oil in the trunk of your car, you know,
right.
they need a place to put it. Mm-hmm. And our great worry is that we don't have people doing dumping, you know, just driving down the country and dumping, because that's absolutely against, you know, what we're trying to do, which is keep the environment and keep our water systems clean. But as these programs come down, that's one been my big bugaboo for years, is if the feds are going to require something, then help us pay for it. But, hey, we can't blame just the feds. You know, we in the state do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just like we tried to pass off the roads to the North Star Borough without, you know, any payment or anything to help them in trying to maintain them or keep the snow off. So you have to be constantly vigilant that the requirements you make or not putting, overloading the burden on the homeowners in local areas. And this is what's happening from the federal level, from the state level. And hopefully we can just keep vigilant and try to protect ourselves in that. We have a group here that's trying to help watch into many of these, and I think you're familiar with it, Susan. It's the Citizens Advisory Commission on the Management of Alaska Lands.
Mm-hmm.
And their offices here in Fairbanks, and they've been trying to help watch the regulatory process, particularly as the land use into those things that were guaranteed to us through Anilka and ANSCA, to see that we didn't, that the federal government did live up to their word, which of course they haven't been doing, either to us or to the Commonwealth of Northern Marianas, which was the latest Commonwealth we got, and Guam's now going for Commonwealth. So the federal level is increasing the requirements. The state level is increasing the requirements through the regulatory process and through laws. And it's a very hard thing to get control of when, for three times, you know, we've tried to get the capability of annulling regulations so that we can make sure that those regulations don't go beyond federal requirements,
mm-hmm.
or that those regulations live up to the expectations and the intent of legislation and not beyond that. And frankly, we've been fighting a losing battle.
We're talking today with Senator Betty Fahrenkamp, representative of District K since 1978, and we're looking in this first part of the program at environmental issues and taking sidesteps as well within that context to look at federal and state regulations and how they're impacting the people who need to comply with them. This is Susan McGinnis. This is Sunday at Noon. You can call in and talk to the senator today at 474-5044. That's 474-5044. The handsome and lovely John Christopite will take your calls and pass them on to the senator and I. But within that large question, there are new requirements for solid waste disposal. And
yes.
You've been looking, is it through the Resource Committee, at ways of dealing with that?
Yeah, and I started to tell you in forming compacts, the four states that are working on trying to have a compact together is Washington, Oregon, Utah, and Alaska. And with us being, you know, so far away, we have a reciprocal agreement in the compact that we're working under now. But the thoughts of them shipping their waste up here, you know, right now seems very far-fetched. But, hey, when you stop and think about it, we're shipping ours down there. So why is it so far-fetched, you know?
Is shipping the answer? I mean, can we just keep moving this stuff around the country? And
no, and if you notice, it's being done through, plane loads, barge loads, truck loads. No, it isn't. And so states are trying to work together in areas and regions to try to help solve that problem. The preponderance of the evidence of how people feel seems to be that each state should take care of its own waste. But in some instances, you know, that's almost impossible. Look at little New Jersey. They've got very little land left. And look at Big Alaska. We have, if we're not able to use landfill system, no matter how that's worked out, we have too little waste usually for it to work out for us to have the waste companies that go around either with mobile units or otherwise, and you pay them to dispose of your waste however it's done, whatever their method happens to be. There are a lot of new businesses springing up through the Lower 48 of people in trying to handle waste of all kinds, other than, you know, even the hazardous waste situation.
You've been looking at recycling as one of the answers. Is that practical in this state?
To some extent, yes, it is. And you know, we've had some people here who had great ideas with it. The problem is that we have, you need a market for the recyclable materials, and our market is very small. So that hurts us, yeah. Both incineration and in those types of units, and in trying to dispose of the whatever material is made from the waste. You know, a lot of places it's been used to produce heat and electricity now, which is one method. But how we'll work it out still is one of those things we're plugging along on, always seeming to react, not be ahead of the game.
Right. It's a real interesting question because we're too small for dumpsters. I mean, too big for dumpsters and too small for major efforts as some of the other states are making. I think we'll get back to this question in a minute. In the meantime, we have a caller. Hi. This is Susan McGinnis. You're on Sunday at Noon. Hi.
Betty, good to hear you talking about this stuff. I'm looking at an ad that was in last Wednesday's Newsminer put out by the Department of Environmental Conservation. And it's about the air quality. What is it? Control Regulation State Air Quality Control Plan. They're going to have 5 hearings around the state. The one in Fairbanks is on the 27th, 7 p.m. And in the down towards the bottom of this long ad in very small print, it talks about wood stoves, and it talks about achieving a opacity standard of 50%, which has something to do, I guess, with the ability to look through the smoke at where it comes out of your chimney. And the last line of that says, during announced air emergencies for particulate matter, operation of these wood stoves would be prohibited. Now, this is way down in the bottom of a very long ad.
In small print, no doubt.
Really small print. Not to look at a conspiracy here. But are we going to see DEC wood stove police here in the next year or two? What's going on with this?
Well, we already have them. For instance, you know, I'm down in Juneau, January through the middle of May, and there are a lot of times that like in the valley and areas near the airport, that wood stoves are prohibited now. So, yes, we're going to see it, and yes, we already have it.
Okay, my problem is that The only air quality sampling that I'm aware of up here is done by the borough, and it's done down within the city, I guess 2nd and Cushman and maybe one or two other locations.
Uh-huh.
I don't have a problem with restricting wood stoves within a couple thousand feet of 2nd and Cushman. I don't think there are many, but the bulk of the wood stove users are out here in the country, outside the city limits, 8, 10, 15 miles from town, but still in the borough. And I would hate to see DEC rely on urban air quality readings to restrict wood stove use 15 miles away.
Yeah, and you've hit on a very major problem for the whole state of Alaska. You know, they're just in Congress now redoing the Clean Air Act. And in that Clean Air Act, as it came from the president, is a section on vistas, which means that even, you know, seeing the wood smoke could be, or any other for that matter, could be considered an infraction. The problem in Alaska is that in other than the areas of when we have an inversion and we have cars running in very cold weather, our area is usually so much cleaner than anywhere else. But the federal law doesn't say that you have to reach a certain standard particularly, but that you can exceed an increase in your standard. So it's like right now we're looking under wetlands, trying to purchase land in Arizona to be able to build something up here, for crying out loud, with all the land we've got. Here we are with the cleanest air anywhere around. But if we add an industry or something like that, then somewhere we've got to take out of the air enough particulates to cover what's put in. It puts us, we're just not considered in Washington when it comes to passing legislation. There is not enough exemptions for places like Alaska.
Betty, down in Juneau, who enforces this nonsense, the borough or DEC itself?
That's borough down there, and I think with the help of DEC, because a lot of times that goes right into the airport and closes down the airport as well.
Well, if there's a problem, then I can see cutting down the thing, but 10, 15 miles from town, I can't believe there's a problem.
Well, are they more likely to shut down the airport or shut down a larger industry before they're going to tell people to douse their fires at 40 below, which is usually when we get our inversions, which is usually when we get our high particulate counts?
Well, I really don't think that the people out in the boroughs, I think they need to go down and participate in this these hearings. A lot of times those people who are riding the regs are in Juneau or Anchorage and have no idea what the devil you're talking about when you're talking about bush areas in the outskirts of our boroughs and don't really know that there, you know, we have places that is their heat. Mm-hmm. That their heat is strictly wood stove. And I can't for the life of me seeing people say you can't burn wood. You got to go into town and buy oil and cart it back and forth when you don't even have an oil furnace.
They'd need some bulletproof vests, wouldn't they, Betty?
Around this country, I'm afraid so.
Okay, good show, Susan. Thanks, Betty.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
If you'd like to get in on this conversation with Senator Betty Fahrenkamp on any issue of your choosing, I think we can open that up. 474-5044 is the number to call. 474-5044. John will pick up the phone. We'll put you on hold until we got a minute to break in. 474-5044. Eielson Air Force Base was targeted as a major cleanup site just this mm-hmm. last week. Mm-hmm. We had Alaska Battery is still ongoing as a cleanup site. And I heard recently, and I don't know whether I'm passing gossip or truth along the airwaves, that Elmendorf Air Force Base down by Anchorage it doesn't even have decent drinking water anymore, that you can't drink out of your tap without some threat of noxiousness or toxicity. And I don't know, Betty, whether you know the answer to this, are these extreme examples? Is Alaska being relatively mistreated by the military, or is this all across the country and the feds are finally catching up with it?
Well, I think that for a long period of time, the military, you know, the feds are great at passing requirements for everybody else but themselves. Mm. And we have had problems over the years, both with The dumping of, old sites that they say have been cleaned up, and you go snow machining and running over old
battery casings.
The shells and everything else. Mm-hmm. But that there's been a lot of cleaning up done on that. I know we did, when I first went down there, we were doing a study on what was happening. You know, we did have some heavy water at Isles. And in trying to get responses to the Senate Resources Committee from the federal, from the military, at that time they just tell you to get lost. You know, now they're very much more responsive, and that's helpful. We did find that that some of that heavy water had been put just into a regular well, but there was testing around, and there had not been any harm from it from what was supposed to be in the testing done. I know too little about that, and I don't do the testing myself, right, you know, to know. But our DEC is pretty, usually pretty good on those kinds of tests. I think that we do have some problems. A lot of them had been on the slope. Those mostly have been cleared up. And those that remain, believe it or not, are mostly on state lands. So, from the state leases, and they're working on those. And we have some major problems. However, Susan, believe me, our problems are small compared to those whose aquifers are really being affected. So far, we have had some effects, and a lot of ours comes from natural seepage from, because we're so mineralized. That's kind of like our radon. You know, we always test very high. It's not because we're not... we're building our buildings any worse than anybody else, and you know, we've been in the building program that we're encouraging. That's great, and it would keep that radon out of the homes. But we have such a mineralized subsurface that we have higher levels than most areas.
Thanks. We have another call on the line. If you'd like to get involved in this conversation, the number to call is 474-5044. Hi, you're on the air with Senator Betty Fahrenkamp.
Hello.
Hello. Go ahead.
Hello, my name is Clint Elston, and I'm calling from Healy, Alaska.
Thank you, Clint.
A friend of Betty's, we've met before, and I just wanted to kind of update her because I haven't had a chance lately to let her know what's happening in regards to the waste problems as we have throughout the state that we've been trying to do things.
Clint, tell me about
it. Well, you know, Betty, we're one of the Interior Manufacturers Association members, and
yeah,
we're going to be setting up our displays here at the airport tomorrow. So
fantastic.
It's one of the best things that we've got going on here in the state. But one thing, through the governor's office, there was an inventor's grant that we submitted through the Department of Commerce and was submitted and evaluated by the National Bureau of Standards in Washington, D.C. And their evaluation came through the other day and found that the Alaskan composting toilet system is probably the most plausible sanitary method of dealing with human waste in isolated remote locations, especially for Alaska.
Clint, you were one that I was thinking about when I was talking about the ingenuity that's going on here and things that could be done. Go ahead.
Well, we've been trying to be innovative and ingenuitive and all these things, and now we're trying to put this grant, as we're now being recommended to the Department of Energy for possible funding, because this invention does help our energy situation, not to mention our waste problems that we've got. But we've coupled this now with our Alaska Science and Technology Foundation grant. We're hoping that in the February next meeting that the two agencies will be able to put the program together in order that we can get some funding to do some testing in a village of Gullivan, which they've got an Alaska Craftsmanship Home program with a HUD program that would be able to test the Alaskan systems under actual laboratory conditions to be able to prove that it'll work, and then with that data, hopefully PHS will be able to then feel confident that it's about time that we start dealing with our waste at the location instead of, as Susan says, how much longer can we start, you know, continue to transport this stuff around when it's absolutely unnecessary.
Yeah, and when we have spills and we have trucks turnover and when we have, you know, one of the states that nobody wants to have any right to dump any waste is in their state is California, because their method of transporting it is so bad, and it just, you know, leakage on the road and stuff. But I'm glad to hear what's happening there, Glenn.
Also, one other thing, just I'm trying to take up the whole air here. 2 days ago, with the help of Charlie Deere from Alaska Window, we met with the city of Fairbanks Wastewater Department in regards that there's a sludge problem in the community there, not only Fairbanks, but it's a worldwide problem. As you say, trucks driving the stuff around and everything. Well, there's an EPA grant out, and we met with John Michaels and the Rowan Engineering and Northern Testing Laboratory, and we're going to submit for this, and our proposal would be that instead of just taking the sludge and directly land applicationing it, would be to compost it and mix it with wood shavings and stuff, and hopefully come out with a fertilizer instead of a waste treatment problem.
Fantastic.
We can do this. We can demonstrate again that this technology, hopefully we could then create a manufacturing operation that would be local and in the interior and create employment. And this kind of technology, again, we could export worldwide.
Clint, what would you do with that? Would if I have a manufacturing concern that creates sludge as a byproduct, would I bring it to you or you come pick it up from me and mix it up for compost over time? Is that what you...
Well, in the work that we do, it's with organic waste, Susan. So in the applications, actually, you know, we're doing the individualized homeowner stuff right now, and we're doing a good job of that. But we're trying to go into the larger commercial applications. So for the city of Fairbanks, for example, you have a wastewater treatment plant that has a sludge problem. But there are other industries, such as if you had a slaughterhouse and you've got some organic material, or if you've got a fish industry and you've got the organic material there, or if you've got some form of organic waste treatment problem, Mother Nature's way of converting this stuff. For example, Susan, all of organic matter, sludge or whatever, 95% of it is water. So in an aerobic environment, which if you can contain it, and what we've come up with is an automated thing to make it so it's done automatically, this problem becomes actually very easy to deal with, and actually you end up with a resource. So what we're trying to do here is in our society is recycle, as we talked about before, and continue the circle, as which we aren't doing presently. And what we presently do is try to bury it or ship it out to sea or barge it someplace or something like that. So if we can understand it, the biggest thing, as the National Bureau of Standards said, was just in our industry, is that it's just overcoming a lot of persons' past preconceptions in regards to this kind of form of decentralization of waste treatment and taking care of the situation at the location.
That's so too, Clint, in that, you know, you get away with using that in fertilizers and stuff after it's properly treated. It's so much better than chemicals and et cetera for your plant growth. And it's nature's way of doing it, really. You're just speeding it up.
Absolutely correct. I'll say one more thing here and get off the phone so somebody else can talk. The other aspect about the air quality, you might have read about this in the paper last year, but this ground source heat pump thing that we installed here in order to prove that we could create heat with frozen earth, during the big chill at 52 degrees below zero, our heat pump ran 24 hours a day. It used 91 kilowatts, which is about $7 a day. So we were using 25.9 degree temperature to make 140 degree hot water, and we didn't have any fossil fuel burning here in the house, so we were using the electricity generated at the power plant here to its greatest efficiency. It's like 250% efficiency instead of 100%. So what we tried to demonstrate with this also is that we can solve or try to attempt to be involved with our air qualities, our water qualities, and in reality, this could be a tremendous opportunity for Alaska in regards to what we could do economically, because we are a tremendous testing area here, and by utilizing these innovative technologies, we can eventually, again, export this technology and bring economic development into our country while environmentally proving that economically it's more viable to start looking in these directions.
It's people like you guys, Clint, that keep us very hopeful. And, you know, that's it's just hard for me to believe what all you're able to do now. To me, it's just amazing.
Well, again, but I just want to update you all and sure appreciate you, all the things that you all are doing down there, and just want to say hello to you all. So, Susan, thanks a bunch for letting us on here.
Thanks for the call, Clint.
Thanks, Clint.
Well, it brings up an idea of redefining what we now call waste. There's an opportunity to cut out the middleman in the area of chemical fertilizers, perhaps. The chemical fertilizer people would die, but maybe they would just change their methods. But instead of paying for dealing with waste, we might turn waste into something that actually...
profitable.
Right, mm-hmm. made money or made energy or in mm-hmm. some way. And that way our state budgets perhaps wouldn't be so hysterical.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've spent a lot of time on those, but, you know, there are other things that we're being required by the federal government to change, and that's our methods of, you know, like our guides and guide regulation. That's, of course, through the courts, not by the feds. And we're looking at a forestry and the forestry industry and a forestry act and what we're going to do. And right now, we're kind of just sitting around and using for firewood and a few mills, but not really planning our forest and how we're going to develop them and how we're going to maintain them over long periods of time to keep a viable timber industry going. And there are exciting things going on there, just like there are exciting things going on in the waste products. The problem is, Susan, trying to keep up. You know, there's so many of them.
Well, and if you don't have the luxury for long-term planning because there are so blasted many fires going, that I'm sure it's very frustrating.
Yeah, we call it stomping alligators.
Get them alligators.
Yeah, because we don't have them around here. Somebody has some fun and puts them in a gravel pit sometime in the summer.
No, thanks. I swim in those gravel pits. You're listening to Sunday at Noon on KUAC-FM. We have another caller on the line and about 25 minutes to go. Hi. Are you there?
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
It's all yours.
Hi, Senator Fahrenkamp, I know that you've concentrated quite a bit on environmental issues this morning. What I'd like you to do, if you wouldn't mind, is perhaps expanding a little bit beyond environmental issues just for a few minutes. I'm going to hang up after I present you with this question and listen to your answer. What are we looking forward to this session in the legislature? Each session has its focus of attention on two or three major issues. Looking back, of course, we could see what happened last year. What do you anticipate this year to be happening in the legislature? Of course, abortion will be one. How about one or two other issues pertinent to the state of Alaska? What are we going to? What's going to excite us? What is going to happen in this year's legislature? Do you anticipate? I'll hang up now. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Good question. On the abortion issue, I don't know whether we'll have that or not. And one of the reasons I'm saying that is, you know, we have so darn many people running for election and trying to stay the heck away from that issue. And I think that the likelihood of us ever having a vote on the abortion issue is very slim this session. Of course, you know, heck, your crystal ball is as good as mine. So who knows? It just doesn't seem that with all the things we have that are we're behind the curve on, that this will happen. To go on with your question, I think one we'd mention is the Forest Practice Act. I think the guide legislation that's been, you know, we've been working through that all this interim. The Forest Practice Act they've been working on now for 3 years, and I think we have a darn good forestry planner person in Mr. Dick, who is with the forest people now with the state. I think another thing that will hit us during this session is, you know, we're doing an analysis. We keep hearing whether or not we're overtaxing oil companies or undertaxing oil companies, whether they're getting too much money or whether we're being too hard on them and not going to produce and drill. So the Ledge Council is doing a study, and it's called Tax Comparison Act, group. And I chair that group. We're meeting Monday, tomorrow, and the next day in Anchorage. We have hired consultants that are from, one from the U.S., one from England, and one from, I think it's, I can't remember right now. But anyway, what we're looking at is whether or not we are overtaxed, and trying to form a model so that we can, you know, change variables and see what the end results will be. And those hearings will be, meetings will be tomorrow and the next day. We expect something from that report.
Is that model going to be set up based on comparisons all around the world of how oil companies are taxed?
What we're going to do tomorrow and the next day is pick which countries. We have a partial study including 100 different countries and different areas. So what we're going to do now is try to narrow that down to those that are closer to us, both in regulatory systems and in climatical conditions. And of course, that's impossible. And so the reason we've been having so many conflicts is that we're trying to compare apples and oranges. So what we're trying to do is get the expertise we need to know how to compare apples and apples. And there's, you know, that therein lies the rub when you're looking at the North Sea or some other area. It's trying to get as many of those variables closer to an even plane. And we're trying to keep our credibility with this study so that and we're keeping the meetings very open. Anybody from the oil industries or from regulators or from revenue or anywhere else can come in and say their piece and see and tell us what questions they think we should ask. And so I guess we're going to find out tomorrow if we've even been asking the right questions. So it's an uphill struggle, but I think we'll have that before the session is here. Do we need to make any breaks? Or?
No, we're fine.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Other things that I expect during this session or the what we're going to do about the mental health situation. You know, we got out of court on the mental health issue simply because we made an agreement with the mental health community. I do not feel that the legislature or the state has been living up to that agreement, so here we go. And, you know, it's not just the feds, it's the state as well. And unless we do something there to meet the needs of that mental health community, particularly since Alzheimer's disease has been added as a mental condition, which most of us suspected for many years, those, I think, will be some of the major issues that we'll be facing, communications problems. And we are, you know, above the state of art in communications in this state. Susan, you should see the people when, like a couple of Saturdays ago, there was a meeting in Texas that many of us could not attend, so we attended my teleconference from here. And it was amazing to see those legislators sit around and say, well, tell Betty or tell Frank or Steve or tell so-and-so, you know, this, that, the other, when we could hear them perfectly well.
I'm here.
And they could hear, and we'd say, hey, man, we're hearing you. You know, just go ahead with your meeting perfectly normal. It's something they're not used to. And in many ways, we're above the curve, but so many other issues, we're behind the curve. And trying to get the federal government to understand why some of their restrictions don't apply here. I think the reclamation issue will be before us on mining. We've got to make some decision on what type of program we have there. The testimony all summer has been more, it's got to be flexible, it's got to be dependent upon the location and the types of soils and that kind of thing, what types are required. And a lot of people think we don't have reclamation now, but we do. It's in the permitting system. So that's one of the reasons when you start going through all these issues that I don't believe at this time that abortion will be one of those issues. I think, as usual, the main things that I'm going to be concerned with is what the main thing I've been concerned with for the 11 years I've been there is trying to protect our individual rights and our rights as a state. I don't think we as a state go to court too often or fight hard enough too often for what was granted us and the exemptions that were granted when we became a state. But, you know, until I become a governor or something like that, which I don't intend to do, I don't have too much right to gripe about that other than to see the governor and try my best to get him. And we are in court on two issues now, and the western states are in court trying to get the federal government to return more of the process to the states and more protection for the 10th Amendment for states. With that, I think I'll run down a little bit till there are questions or someone else.
Okay. Good survey of things that might be showing up in the legislature this year. I did have a question about the guiding issue in the Supreme Court, since you brought up when we do and when we don't go to court. We had a joint and an exclusive No, I'm not going to even try and guess. Tell me how this. Tell me what was thrown out in the court.
The exclusive guiding areas.
Right.
And that we had that committee last interim before the last session, and this year we're still being active in it through watching the legislation because that proposed legislation because it'll be coming to our committee. But Senator Fakes of Anchorage is chairing that commission, and the commission has been trying to work out a system whereby we don't kill the guiding industry, and we don't go against the law, and whereby the resource is protected for the use of the citizens of the state of Alaska.
It was a pretty interesting, in your notes, a pretty interesting idea of creating a leasing system.
Yeah.
How would that work?
Well, pretty much like the federal. See, what we're trying to do is we now have a good understanding and we do work on many of the areas of federal lands where Fish and Game has authority. And we're trying to keep that so that we don't lose that authority on federal lands. And their leasing program is that they're leased for periods of time, and they go out on everybody eligible to try to obtain the lease. And I don't. Nancy has been attending those meetings. In fact, there's another one tomorrow, at the same time that I'm chairing another meeting. So, now my AA in the resources area will be attending those meetings to try to keep up with where we are, so that we don't have to do. Catch up, you know, mm-hmm. after the session starts.
Okay. We have a couple of callers. I'll ask one to wait and one to go. Hi, you're on the air with Senator Betty Fahrenkamp.
Hello?
Yes, it's your turn. Go right ahead.
Yeah, my name is Cag Lee, and I'm calling from Denali Park. And it seems that we hear a lot about talk around the state about raiding the Rail Belt Energy Fund. You hear talk about it in Fairbanks and Anchorage and Juneau. And my main question is, why is it not being spent on energy projects for the rail belt, and why people outside of the rail belt feel that they have a right to it? I guess that's my question. And
good question.
That's a darn good question. And, you know, we in the interior have been fighting dogs over this, because we do not feel that we're getting a square deal on this. My guess would be that we'll lose it this year. We've tried very hard to hold. We don't have enough votes. Anchorage is the largest one block of votes. They seem to be determined that there are projects they want for it. It's been my contention, and will remain so, that should be used for energy projects. Anchorage has had subsidized, whether they want to admit it or not, gas for years and years and years, and we've had very little. We had some intertie work, and when that's great, we needed it. But we've had very little relief on our cost of energy here in this area. My guess would be that it'll be parceled out, and the fight will be to hold it just to the rail belt and not have it expended statewide, and that it would probably go towards what's considered a project that will enhance the economic viability of the various areas. If this is the way it goes, then our main project will be the science building here in Fairbanks and at the university. But nobody knows at this time how it's going to go. There seems to be some agreements among some of the different groups, but I have not been privy to those meetings, because they know where I stand. I'd like to see it used for energy for our area.
That's such a strange one. I mean, the balloon went up, and before it got off the ground, so many claws went into it that it just didn't.
Well, you know,
we had a
blackmail clause. We had a protection for us, because we could see this coming down the road, and the people who had already been helped and gotten their share already said, mm-hmm. Oh, okay, we got ours now. We want ours and yours, too. And that's kind of what's happening, I think.
Hi, you're on the air with Senator Betty Fahrenkamp.
Hi, Betty.
Hi.
You mentioned that a consultant firm or somebody, some consultant was hired to study the worldwide taxation standards for oil. Why did it take 13 years after the pipeline started flowing to do this?
That's just a darn good question. I don't know. Do you know?
I have no idea. I would think this would have been...
I think it's about time, though, don't you?
15 years ago, at least.
Yeah.
Why did you have to hire a consultant? Couldn't that something a secretary could do? I've called around the world before finding out information.
No, we don't want to just... It's not just information. We're after advice. And we have people who have worked both sides of the fence, both as advisors to oil companies and as advisors to nations. And we're treating ourselves as if we were kind of a third-world nation in that we're a developing state, and we're... Haven't been or not sure. We don't know exactly why we're always in court. Is it because, you know, because of the confidentiality aspects? We haven't been able to really find out what the heck's wrong with our tax laws, so that we're constantly in courts with our taxation, and we're just tired of it. And I think it took a little too long. I agree with you. It took too long for us to get tired of it.
Will a report be issued, or so? How would we find out what the results of the consult?
We hope to have our reports out, and the materials from which we can go to bid for or to try to develop models out by February.
Great. Thanks a lot.
You bet.
And is there any chance that this will drag the question of oil company taxation out of the realm of politics and courts and put it into the realm of actuaries?
Well, I think it will. I don't see it getting us out of courts, but I think it will help to advise us more. So many times we just have to, we have one part group, we have revenue telling us one thing, we have oil companies telling us another thing, we have independence telling us something else, and we have to just kind of go on gut reaction and on our advice from, we've been having, getting advice from Cambridge and other areas, trying to keep up to date. But heck, we're not experts. And so what we're trying to do now is to get a model that can be agreed upon by the oil company, so we stop this darn fighting all the time and say, hey, look, we've got the proof now, don't snow us anymore. Or to revenue saying, hey, you're out of line, we're charging enough. But I certainly don't know at this stage of the game where we are. I just think it's about time. I agree with the previous caller. It's about time we were doing this.
Another quick red flag question. What about marijuana? Is there enough on the legislature's plate and a big enough election coming up that we won't change the...
No, I think that referendum will be there. And I think there's enough people... I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about our marijuana laws, but I think there's enough people that are really concerned about it and about this message sent that I think it'll be there through the referendum process. I don't think it'll be there through legislation. It may, and it could very well be. We've had legislation every year. There, again, is another place where we have had two different sides coming in. You know, one said, hey, we are one of three states with a definite privacy act that was amended by our Constitution. This bill is unconstitutional and will not pass muster. And the cops saying, well, we're not going to enforce it anyway, but it ought to be on the books. I'm not one that happens to believe that we should not take a strong stand for keeping people from having to go to court again to declare the laws that we've done as unconstitutional and have to come back again and redo it. But so if it's done through an initiative on our constitutional amendment, then we'll have to find out legally how that's performed. But I have a feeling there'll be a referendum on the ballot.
Okay. We've got about 7 minutes left here on Sunday at Noon. You're talking with Senator Betty Fahrenkamp. We've got a caller on the air and a couple more questions to ask. I always need 2 hours when you come to this.
I like that.
Yeah. Hi, you're on the air with Senator Betty Fahrenkamp.
Hello, yes. This is Don Gray. I live here in Fairbanks.
Hello, Don.
Hi. And, Betty, one of the bills that passed on the House side last year was the bill to allow a plebiscite to let all the people in the state decide whether or not they wanted to have an education endowment fund established for the future using part of the money in the permanent fund. And there was a public hearing here
yesterday.
In town yesterday with... what I, my opinion was a very vociferous, loud minority who were saying that basically that the only public purpose we can use anything from the permanent fund for was handing out individual checks to people rather than using it for the common good. What are the odds for this bill to allow everybody in the state to decide whether or not there ought to be an education endowment fund?
Don, that's up in the air right now. I think the bill is in the Senate, And I think it will depend a lot on whomever, on what, I believe that's in the Education Committee. Is that in Paul's committee right now? I could look it up and make sure. But I don't know about what people ought to have a right to vote on that. However, I see some upsides and some downsides to it. You know, when the permanent fund was put in, when I voted for it at least, it was with the understanding that part of that revenue from the permanent fund would be used at the time it was needed for help with government. I don't know where that's going to go. There's a lot of mixed reaction to it. Somehow we've got to protect education. And those people now who are yelling, you know, hey, we want a permanent fund dividend. We don't want anything to stop that. They also want, many of those want us to do only what is the role of government. And I don't know where that would put even the permafund, because that really isn't the role of government, but it was a constitutional amendment. But I don't know where that will put our longevity bonuses. I don't know where it'll put some of the pioneer benefits. I don't know where it's going to put education. We've got to have a means of doing what is a constitutional requirement of the state of Alaska, and that is to educate our children.
Oh, I agree with you. I came to Alaska 20 years ago, and at that time we had a statewide income tax. Here locally we had a borough and a city sales tax, and we provided public services. And now it seems that there's an attitude on the part of at least a vocal minority that they expect a lot of services, and they expect, you know, cash itself from the government. They expect benefits. They criticize people who are serving in public office, and that just seems like a pretty strange situation, frankly.
Well, I think people serving in public office today are considered a little bit, probably a little bit lower than a snake's belly. But those of us who do enjoy the work and know how much it affects our whole life, I think we'll still continue to serve. I think the bad part is that it discourages a lot of time people that should be participating, and it keeps us from having a broad spectrum of representation in our legislature. And a lot of people forget that the legislature is the only voice they have. It's not the administration, and it's not the regulators. It is the legislators who stand up for them. And we try to kill off our own, I guess. I don't know what it is, Don.
Well, you're doing a good job, and we appreciate the fact that you and others are serving in public office. And I think maybe that too often that we're, as the general public, we remain silent and just let a few of the loudmouths criticize you too much. So keep up the good work.
Thank you, Don. I appreciate that. I do know that with the 90 word, with the curve that's coming down from production as it presently is on the slope, And the place where those curves meet, something's got to give along the line now. And if we don't want services, if we don't want police, fire, and if we want our roads and our buildings to deteriorate to where it's going to, we're going to have to put out fortunes to rebuild them, then something's wrong somewhere. I know, but there've got to be. There's, to my opinion, there is not that much space left, but what we're going to have, every cut we make is going to start costing 63 cents about thereabouts out of people's pockets.
Betty, so, I want to ask off of Don's question, just flat out, should we go back to an income tax in the state, in the borough, in the city?
I don't think the time is ready for that yet. But it's going to, something's got to give. I think at the present time that anyone that put in for an income tax or supported an income tax would not go back. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to be long before people are going to have to say, hey, you know, it's for the good of the state. I've got to do what's good for the good of the state. And if I don't go back, I don't go back. But I don't think that time is here yet.
How do we get ahead of the curve on this one?
I don't think we do. Isn't that encouraging?
No, and it's not a good note on which to end our program, but we have to. John just told me we had less than a minute.
Oh, well, thank you, Susan, for having me here. I'll, Hope I didn't yak too long.
Oh, no, I like you to yak too long. Do you have last thoughts before we go?
Just that it's great that you have this type of program. Anytime you'd like me back, I'll be happy to come back.
Come back tomorrow. We'll sit down. I'm Susan McInnes with Senator Betty Fahrenkamp. This has been Sunday at Noon. As always, it's a privilege and a pleasure to have the senator with us. Do hope you'll come back. Next Sunday on Sunday at Noon, it being Thanksgiving weekend, we have a taped interview with composer Lou Harrison. I hope you'll enjoy talking about his music, his life, and the direction of music in our time. The week after that, we're going to talk to, I hope, now this one isn't tight yet, so you'll forgive me if I have to change my plans, but I'm hoping to sit down with some scientists from Westridge to talk about global warming trends, especially as they are affecting the state of Alaska and what our weather might look like if we keep warming up our climate. Following that, a program that I know several people at least are interested in because I've gotten calls at home, William Sloan Coffin, who sat down with me this week to talk, will be aired on tape on the program on December 17th. Join us for Sunday at Noon, every Sunday at Noon. I'm Susan McInnes. John and I hope you have a good Sunday.